Welcome to the You Lead Podcast, equipping you to lead.
Hi, and thanks for joining us again for another installment of the You Lead Personal Leadership Podcast. I'm excited that you've joined us. Today we've got two special guests, Chris Wiersma and Chris Brogan. Chris Brogan is president of Human Business Works. He also consults and speaks professionally with Fortune 100 and 500 companies like PepsiCo, General Motors, Microsoft, and more. He is a New York Times best-selling co-author of Trust Agents and a featured columnist at Entrepreneur Magazine. Chris's blog, chrisbrogan.com, is in the top five of the Advertising Age Power 150. He has over 11 years' experience in online community, social media, and related technologies. Chris Wiersma is the lead pastor of Westside King's Church in Alberta. He has been a keynote speaker for us at the Orange Conference, and he currently resides in Calgary, Canada. He's featured on a weekly podcast that's available on iTunes. Chris and Chris will be talking about their personal brand and asking the question, what one message are you sending with your life and your words? Both these men are great communicators, and I hope you enjoy their conversation.
My name is Chris Wiersma. I've founded one of the largest young adult ministries in North America, and now I lead a neat church in Southwest Calgary here in Canada. And my wife and I are currently raising three happy daughters. And it's Valentine's Day, and I'm talking to a guy on the phone about branding, which is a great way to celebrate Valentine's Day. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, very Valentine-y, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And so I'm Chris Brogan, and I'm calling from northern Massachusetts, which looks not unlike Calgary in some ways right now with all the snow and everything like that. And I've done a couple things. I co-wrote a book called Trust Agents with a kid from Montreal, so there's our Canada connection, plus I married a Newfoundlander. And
You're an honorary Canadian.
Pretty much. You know, I've eaten poutine. I've been screeched in St. John's, Newfoundland. I have a lot of relatives out in the in Quebec province as well as in New Brunswick. So I'm pretty much in there. So we're talking a lot about a bunch of things, including personal branding today. So I guess it'd be pretty interesting to hear a little bit about your version of a personal brand, especially as somebody who's working with ministry.
Yeah. A lot of sound bites have made their way around ministry leadership circles when it comes to the importance of having a brand, especially a personal brand. And I guess my understanding of that has always been that a brand is a promise. And I would make a further distinction. It's not necessarily the promise you are trying to make, you know, where you basically say, if you hang around me or you do business with me or whatever, and you have this idea in mind, then you won't be let down. It's not necessarily the promise that you're trying to make. It's the promise that people think you're making. That basically they look at you and sort of get this feeling or a sense or an idea that this is what you're all about. What do you think, Chris?
That's definitely a way to say it. It's the way I've been running into it in the business world is that I think there's a couple things that have brought this on. One is that the platform exists for people to do some sort of branding, some sort of making themselves stand out from the fold. I think secondly, I think it helps combat in some people's mind that sense of just being a cog at whatever they're doing, a cog at work or whatever. So I think people started getting interested in personal branding around the time that they started feeling like, you know, just another cubicle farmer or, you know, just another person in the flock. So I think it's sort of an interesting psychological pinning that hits us at the same time a technology has made itself available to make people feel that way. So I don't know. I think it's like any tool, right? It can be used for good and it can be used for bad. I think at this point we're trying to use it for good.
Definitely. I think that, you know, it's probably become very important in the last, I don't know, decade or so, because the pace of life has accelerated so much that you need to have some sense of what you're about or what you want to be about. And my wife and I spent a lot of time talking about this because I think you can get to somewhere around 30 to 35 years old, especially if you're married and have kids. You can get to 30 or 35 years old just by saying yes. and adding commitments to your plate at work, at home, in your volunteer world, all that kind of stuff. But somewhere in there, you reach maximum capacity, and you have to start to make difficult choices between great things that you could be about or invest in. And I think having some sense of how you want to define your life and your identity and your commitments is critical for that, because it helps you to know what to say yes to and what to say no to. And I think what makes it even more complicated is you're not saying yes to all the good things and no to all the bad things, or yes to all the smart things and no to all the dumb things. You're having to make yes and no decisions between things that are all really good and all really smart. And if you're going to have some sense of focus and critical mass in who you are, I think you need a template to help you sit down and say, you know, here's 9 really good things I'm never going to do, because I'm choosing to be all about these 3 good things over here.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Chris. And I think that's where, it's funny, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking this is what a lot of entrepreneurial types run into, is that, you know, in a world of countless opportunities, you really do have to throttle yourself back and say, I'm only going to take a handful. But I think you're right that it's a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of people that are facing that sort of possibilities cascade, that they, holy cow, there's so many different ways I could go, and I've really just got to choose. Interestingly, I wonder if you see the same. We probably both grew up in a time where there weren't as many possibilities, or at least as clearly obvious possibilities. And so, you know, we probably both went, you know, to schools in an area where there was a set number of things you probably were going to turn into. You were inundated by classmates who really felt you'd only go this far and into this direction. And our parents had, you know, sets of opinions of where they thought we'd go. But with this whole personal branding thing, I mean, one of the things is that people at least feel that they can identify and be whatever the heck they feel like being. And then it just sort of becomes a question of, you know, how will you use that for good, and how will you use that in sort of a way that's going to grow for everybody? What do you think about that?
Well, I agree a lot. I think that we had the good fortune of being raised at a time when the horizon was smaller, because it was less overwhelming. You know, growing up, it was pretty clear that your options are to get a job or not get a job. And, you know, this whole business of being conscious of, you know, these extreme possibilities that you can't hide from the digital age, you know, in a very real way, I think it adds up to almost a tyranny of freedom. There's so much freedom and opportunity that, again, I think you got to build a tight list of things you want to be focused on and committed to, and have that help you navigate your way through. I mean, when I think of some of the examples of, you know, people who seem to embody, you know, a strong sense of brand, I'm drawn to the band that I grew up with, which is U2. You know, if you think about how there are many artists out there who get an initial pulse of success, you know, they're doing something in their garage, there's no pressure, and they're just being creative, and then they end up being successful. Well, when success happens, that's kind of the pressure moment when everything can change, because now they're not just doing something in their garage with no pressure. Now they feel like, well, I've made it, and now I want to keep it. I want to take it even further. And they start to live differently. And I think that's why there's a lot of artists out there who, you know, they're one-hit wonder. They make it to the point where they get successful, and then that's it. I think that some of the individuals that we can look to in culture and society that have made it further than that, it's because at some point along the way, they either never lost track of themselves, or they got back in touch with themselves and they said, you know, this is who I am. This is how I find energy. This is what I can commit to. This is how I can be honest, you know, with my fans or my community or my family or whatever, and say, you know, this is my promise in terms of who I can be and what I can deliver and what I can be all about. And I think U2 is a great example of that, because I think they almost lost their way. I'll take for granted that people can ingratiate my U2 fan sensibility. They almost lost their way with an album they did in the early 90s called Pop, which was kind of weird and experimental. But then after that, they kind of came back to themselves, and it's almost like for their whole 30-year relationship, with the music culture, they've basically said, you know, this is what we do. This is who we are. And as a result, there's this big, huge shared thought out there about U2 all around the world, where people more or less have the same idea and look at it and say, yeah, you know, if we go to a U2 concert or listen to a U2 album, this is what it's going to amount to. And I think they've been able to deliver on that for so long because they had a sense at the center for, you know, this is our thing. This is what we do, and we're going to be true to it. We're going to stick to it. What can you think of examples of somebody that's done a good job with that, do you think?
First off, one interesting point I want to add about you, too, is to your point about them making kind of a near-fatal flaw. I particularly think that what they did by having such a strong brand was they were able to make a mistake and then pick back up again. They were able to be absolutely wrong with the direction they went with pop and have people have the power of a fan base to say, sorry, guys, you know us. We didn't mean to go the wrong way. Here we are again, and we'll pick back up. So I think you can only do that when you have a strong sense of branding. In the business world, one of my longtime favorites for personal branding has been Richard Branson, Sir Richard Branson to his friends. He's done a lot from taking, he started a record shop somewhat illegally without really realizing the negatives of what he was doing. And then he started a record label and signed a lot of interesting acts that nobody else was particularly into having. And then he just kept bringing his businesses forward with very similar principles, just this sense that, you know, business wasn't all as tricky as people made it out to be, that businesses deserve to have a personality, that there were it was important to really shake things up and really make people see where they really were as opposed to just kind of fit along in some kind of mold. And, you know, years later, he's working on the same thing with space travel, and he's done a lot with philanthropy in his most recent years, which, of course, was the thing that was probably missing in his brash youth. It's funny when we call out people for not being so great at handling social good, but really, truly, you want to wait till they're wealthy anyway, because that's when they can do the most social good. That's what Bill and Melinda Gates are doing. That's what Warren Buffett's doing. Nobody asks poor people who make $20,000 a year to go all flat out doing social good. They wait until they have multi-billionaires to ask for help.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about collides in very important ways with this whole business of pursuing Jesus and leading in your volunteer world or leading in church world, because there's an aspect of what we're talking about that I think presents some difficulties, because it can be very tempting to think about brand, either your personal brand or the brand of whatever it is you're trying to lead. It's very tempting to think about it in terms of, you know, how can I shape this brand so that it's going to work for me? How can I cast myself in a way that's going to lead to more success? It's going to be very, very practical. It's going to be very pragmatic. And I think this is where, uniquely as pursuers of Jesus, there's an extra challenge for us, because if we just ask questions about what's going to work, what's going to be successful, then it leaves us as just another part of society that's trying to score points, you know. And in our culture, I think it's really important we not do that, first, just because it's inauthentic, period, but also because we live in a culture that's rife with what I would call pseudo-authenticity, because nobody can be inauthentic on purpose and get away with it. So I think that there's a big trend in our culture where people are trying to mimic the feel of authenticity. You know, jeans purchased new that look like they have a history and a story. Jeans purchased new that look like you've been wearing them for a decade. And it's sort of symbolic of something that goes all the way through, I think, both our, the marketplace as well as church world as well. I mean, when you're trying to share your faith with another person or somebody shows up at the church that you attend or the ministry that you lead, the sound of authenticity, you know, really finds resonance in our culture. I think we more than anybody have got to make sure that it's not just the sound or the feel of authenticity, that it actually, it's the truth of who we are. you know, we don't want to be sending messages because they work. We don't want to be shaping our brand because it's effective. I think we ask an extra layer of questions that is more about this, that we would say we want to become something because it reflects God's values and because it's uniquely true to who we are and because it also contributes to our world. And then I think that gives us the opportunity to settle in to a leadership path that is more like an artisan than it is like you're somebody who's just driven by scoring points or being successful or being effective. And I really like that mental image, that you'd find a way to think about your identity and your relationship with God and your contribution to our world, your personal brand, that you could think about it as an artisan, that you'd say, well, I'm going to do this because it's a beautiful reflection of my God. It's a beautiful reflection of who I feel I am and how I want to serve my world. So beauty is the important thing, not effectiveness. I mean, you don't want to ignore effectiveness, but we just don't want to be governed by that. That our message would be, we're doing this because we're finding a different energy in it. We're not just trying to put points on the board in terms of our career or our effectiveness or anything else like that.
I like very much the point that you make about, you know, not just saying it because we can say it, but because it's meaningful and all that. It's very important to make sure that we're talking from, you know, the right heart and everything, and that, you know, we're not just manipulating. We're not just using tools to move a lever, that we're moving the right lever that has something to do with our business and all that. It's an interesting perspective. So one of the questions that we had here was, you know, as far as a leader and specifically a church leader, why is our personal brand so important to create and grow? And I'd love your perspective on it, because I would say that there's a real hinge in how people respond to church leaders if they feel like they know more about them. And I know that it's supposed to be all just about doing God's work, but that's really not ever how it comes down to. It's do I or don't I see some of myself in what the church and or the leader is doing? So how do you respond to that?
Well, you know, this, everything I had to say about what's going on in our culture with pseudo-authenticity and what I think are particular challenges as pursuers of Jesus can go really deep if we let it, if we stop and really think about that. You know, one of the most practical applications for me, and this is going to be very specific, we're always thinking in the West Side community, which is our church, we're always thinking about somebody's first exposure. And it's not because we're trying to put the numbers up. It's because we're looking at that and saying we have such a narrow opportunity to invite people into a conversation that can change the way they think about the Jesus story. We want to do all that we can to be ready for that. And so, you know, I think one of the things that really draws people in is candor, a true, honest, informed candor, that when they hear you talk about you, it has the ring of truth. You know, they're hearing you admit some things that they know to be true, but perhaps they thought you didn't know this about yourself or you'd never even admit it. I think that it's important in our conversations with people that they would also hear us characterize them in a way that's accurate and generous and fair and maybe even courageous, that they'd hear us talk about them in a way that sounds informed. And I think when those two things are in place, we know ourselves and we genuinely know others, the doorway is open for them to say, okay, you've passed two tests of trust here. You've spoken honestly and courageously about yourself, and you've shown that you genuinely know me. So the door's open for you to maybe say something to me about God that I've never heard before. You know, I'll follow you. I'll give you a fair hearing of this right now. And this really fits with a strong message in the New Testament, that truth and love aren't just connected. They can't be separated. You can't really love somebody if you don't know their truth. And it's not really love if it's not true in terms of what's going on in you as well. So I think that brand and authenticity and truth and relationships are something that God squared the market on from thousands of years ago. He's been talking to us about these things for as long as Scripture has existed.
I hope that you've been challenged by the conversation between Chris and Chris. We would love to hear your thoughts on orangeleaders.com. Any insights that you have that we can collaborate around will only make us better. Until next time, keep thinking orange.
Presented by ULEAD.com, a product of the Orange Strategy. Find out more at whatisorange.org.